Hi, friends, and welcome to another Wayfinders Church podcast. Wayfinders Church, we want you to find life, and we've said it a bunch of times, but we think it happens in a few key ways. And we've started saying this as a mantra to ourselves, as a kind of a slogan back to the church and back to you, that we love first, that we do life together, and we live the story. We can unpack that at a later time, but I wanted to say that it has been really, really good to have you in on this podcast series, Begin at the Beginning, and this is our final episode in that. But before we get to that, we have a couple of announcements, and then we have to do our AJH Minute because it's very fitting for today. So the first announcement is this. This weekend, first weekend of November, we have 5, 6, 7, Saturday morning, Sunday afternoon, Monday evening, a two-hour seminar called Finding Our Way with the Bible. And as part of our Finding Our Way series, and this is the first of three teachings that are going to come out with that series, and we would absolutely love for you to be a part of this Finding Our Way with the series, Finding Our Way with the Bible. Because here's the deal. We need tools in our tool belt. We need things that equip us. And so if you've ever wondered, where do they get this stuff about the Bible? Because when I read it, that is not what I get. And how do I read the Bible anyway? And where do you start? And why should we think about it this way? If you've ever wondered where any of that we're talking about is coming from, this teaching is absolutely for you. You would leave empowered to go read for yourself. You would leave empowered by having hands-on experience. You'd have an approach, an idea of where we're coming from, how we got to be where we are. It's going to be really, really good. It's at the Hampton Inn in Kyle. You can go to wayfinders.info and find out more about it. So I would highly, highly, highly recommend that. And then we're starting a brand new series on Sundays, message series called Parenting Fail. And oh my word, some of the stories that have already started coming in are hilarious. We have a list of 8 parenting, damaging parenting styles that you might fall into. We'd love for you to come and be a part of this incredible conversation. So let's jump into our AJH Minute this morning. And I gotta be honest, this quote from Abraham Joshua Heschel is so good. Just so good. It is this. Our concern is not how to worship in the catacombs, but how to remain human in the skyscrapers. Our concern is not how to worship in the catacombs, but how to remain human in the skyscrapers. It's very interesting to me, when we hit rock bottom, when we're drowning in the ocean, when there's too much month at the end of the money, when we really don't know where to turn, we either become totally overwhelmed or we start worshiping and God and calling on Him in prayer and realizing that God's the only way out, that He's the only resource that we actually have, that interaction is amazing. And when we're at the bottom, we have an appreciation for each other and for things. And when we've reached the pinnacle and when we've reached the top, that tends to go away. We tend to puff up in our own pride. And I find this, every time I rethink about this quote, I find new application in my life. So it's this: our concern is not how to worship in the catacombs, but how to remain human in the skyscrapers. You and I have this amazing life that God has given us. How do we remain human in it? Which, of course, brings us to our last episode of Begin at the Beginning. I hope you've really enjoyed this series of podcasts about Beginning at the Beginning, where we've looked at Genesis 1 through 11 as kind of the preamble, precursor introduction to the story of salvation that we find ourselves living in day in and day out. And we kind of redefine how important it was to start at the beginning, because where we start from dictates where we end. How the world is unfolding from chaos to order, and that we have a role in shaping, stewarding, and bringing about the ongoing dynamic unfolding of good life that is blessed and peaceful and whole and ordered. And that sin enters that and kind of reverses it back to chaos and throws things into the mix. But when we start with sin, we often think that we're incapable of what God has for us, where in fact we are capable, because we were created with a divine image that just simply needs to be awakened and restored, and we need to lighten the load. Maybe that's why Jesus said, my burden is easy. He's not heaping more things on us. Rather, he's stripping things away. And so we talked about Cain and Abel. We talked about Noah. We've talked about these incredible stories and the arc that is Scripture itself, and why the beginning is so critical. And now we get to the end of the preamble, because after Noah and his sons come out, there is this kind of repopulation charge that God says he's never going to flood again, and he gives them the call to go and cultivate again. So he kind of reissues his connection with mankind. And then we get into this story in chapter 11, the Tower of Babel, which is why today's episode is called Names, Cities, and Bricks. And I want to talk a bit about names, and then I want to talk a bit about cities, and then I want to talk a bit about bricks and how all of it is contained in this one little story, and it sets us up for the unfolding narrative of how salvation works. In the Bible, cities are typically great achievements. They are establishments, and their accomplishments having to do with how great humans are at their best. They're no longer wandering, but they're putting down roots, they're cultivating, they're taking what was chaotic and making order that is sustainable over time, and it is a beautiful, beautiful picture. And so the Tower of Babel is this story, very weird interaction of God and people in a city. And so if you've never read it, don't know it, I just want to read it to you really quickly. It's not very long. I won't read the whole chapter. It says, "At one time, all the people of the world spoke the same language and used the same words. As people migrated to the east, they found a plain in the land of Babylonia and settled there. They began saying to each other, 'Let's make bricks and harden them with fire.' In this region, bricks were used instead of stone, and tar was used for mortar. Then they said, 'Come, let's build a great city for ourselves with a tower that reaches into the sky. This will make us famous and keep us from being scattered all over the world.' But the Lord came down to look at the city and the tower the people were building." I've got to stop right there. We'll finish the story in just a second. But if you know Jewish writing, like, that's a complete irony. Like, the idea that the bigness of God would come down to see our really big city and tower, he's poking fun at the whole thing. So, "Look," he said, this is God saying, "the people are united, and they all speak the same language, and after this, nothing they set out to do will be impossible for them. Come, let's go down and confuse the people with different languages. Then they won't be able to understand each other. In that way, the Lord scattered them all over the world, and they stopped building the city. That is why the city was called Babel, or Babylonia, which could be confused utterance, or gibberish, or in German, Ursprache, because they're from the land of Ur. Anyway, because that is where the Lord confused the people with different languages, and in this way he scattered them all over the world. Okay, so here's this story. Very, very strange story. All the people are speaking a similar language or types of languages, if you really get into the interpretation there. And people migrated as they moved around, as they were wanderers. They began saying to each other, as they found this land called Babylonia, let's make bricks. Let's make bricks. Now, bricks in the scripture often have to do with slavery. They have to do with the thing that you have to do in order to progress the story at the expense of your own soul. And so when Egypt took the Hebrew people slaves, what did they make them do? They made them build bricks. They made them make bricks to build their pyramids and cities. And see, those bricks represent slavery. And sometimes it represents physical slavery. Sometimes it represents slavery to a sin. It can represent slavery of any sort in the scripture. Let's build bricks, and with those bricks, let's make a great city for ourselves with a tower that reaches into the sky. Then this will make us famous and keep us from being scattered all over the world or losing our position. So names, cities, and bricks. What's interesting about names is that names in the Hebrew world always carry weight. They carry a bigger meaning. So the function, literally, as they're written down, someone is named something for their role, not necessarily just for their personhood. And when we want to make names for ourselves, what do we end up doing? We end up trying to build something that will build us up. Now, in the meantime, we may step on others, putting them into a bondage situation to where we get what we want at their expense. That's called slavery. And then what we may find is that the city itself, what we build itself, may have us bondage. It's interesting that names, cities, and bricks are all intertwined here. In verse 6, God says, look, the people are united and they all speak the same language. After this, nothing will be impossible for them. The first time I read that, and maybe when you read that, you think, wow, God is threatened by humanity. As we progress, as we become, as we learn to work together, to collaborate, to build incredible things, inventions and societies and languages and hierarchies, and as we build these amazing infrastructures, God's threatened by all of that, because that means that we're like him. We're using our creative powers like him, and God is threatened by that. But actually, I think it probably has nothing to do with God being threatened. I think it's recognizing that we can do marvelous things, that there is nothing that we can't do. But whenever we use our own powers for our own gain, we always use them with a lot of pain and turmoil. We always use them where someone gets killed so that we can feel better about ourselves. We always use them at the expense of someone. And so perhaps when God says, let's go down and confuse the people so they won't be able to understand each other, perhaps the desire underneath that is a preventative act to avert evil. Because there are times where we have done great achievements that have come with terrible downsides. If we just stop and think about that for a while, we'll build these incredible homes with wonderful garages that we can drive into, but they keep us isolated from our neighbors. We can stream incredible amounts of entertainment and education directly into our lives, and yet that can lead to a lot of unhealthy binging and not producing or collaborating. We can hold a marvelous piece of technology in our hand that can house hundreds of thousands of songs, and yet it can cause us to have cheap relationship with art. We can build incredible cities and infrastructures, and yet we can have immense damage to the ecosystem and the world around us, whether you're talking about greenhouse gases or toxic waste or deforestation or et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. See, I think what we need to start grasping with is the path of ascent. When we use our power, our free will, our God-given mandate to be fruitful and multiply and take this world somewhere, when we use it on a path of ascent, there is often a dangerous byproduct. And I find it really interesting if you break the names down of the line of descendants from Shem to Adam. In their translation, it would say something like this: the renowned healer releases mission by passing through division to friendship, by intertwining with struggle and wandering to the High Father. Now, I could be totally misreading that, so you don't need to quote me on any of those things, but the story progresses and people are passing from division and struggle and wandering. We're going through those things to the High Father. And in verse 8, which is probably the most critical verse in the story, the city remains unfinished. The city remains unfinished. That's why it was called Babel, because that was where the Lord confused people with their different languages and he scattered them all over the world. So now, the world in which Abraham comes into being. The earth has been fully repopulated. There is more division than ever before because people are trying to make names for themselves, make accomplishments for themselves, and they do it by building with bricks, by using slavery, by becoming slaves. What's also really interesting is, you know, that just a little bit longer in the next chapter, when God does interact with Abram for the first time, he says, I will make your name great. So God has a subversive way of taking us to where we want to be, one that doesn't come at the expense of everybody else, one that doesn't come with baggage tied to bricks. Now, I'm not saying there won't be struggle in your life, but I have to begin wondering, is the Tower of Babel one of those things that is meant to talk about the sweet irony of how funny it is that God would come down to see our mega tower and say, you know what they're about to do? They're about to run themselves into slavery. Let me make this a little more practical for you. Are you in debt? And every month you try to pay and get ahead, but it's a constant struggle. That is a byproduct of something good. Building something. But the byproduct is you can't get out from underneath the interest and fees. Have you used someone to get ahead at work? Have you told a white lie to your family that you felt like was going to protect them? You see, we all want names for ourselves. We all want to be a part of those cities. But the city remains unfinished because it leaves it up to you and me to decide what we're going to do, how we're going to build the city, how we're going to finish the city. Will we do it with God? Will we do it with God's help? Will we finish it that way? Or will we do it on our own using bricks? And remember when we talked about the arc of Scripture? It starts out in a garden, it ends in a city, and if you took the sin problem out in between, you'd have Genesis 1 and 2 and Revelation 21 and 22, and it starts in a garden, ends in a city, and a city is just a bunch of complex gardens working together in a sustainable way that works for everyone. And so here is the question. Is there a way in which you and I have become beholding to the bricks? Has someone else forced us into that? You see, God doesn't want that game to be the game, which is why he scatters the people. It's preventative. It's prevenient grace. It's God going before us. And here's the picture. The thing that God is pulling us forward into is not the reality defined by our past, but the question of what are we going to do now? Now that you can name the city and the bricks, and you can name those things that are keeping us from the life that God really has for us, now we get to say, oh, well, it's unfinished. How are we going to go about finishing it? Because in his house, there are many rooms. His burden is light. Today, my friends, maybe you've realized that you've been hurt by someone trying to make a name for themselves. Or you've hurt someone trying to make a name for yourself. Maybe you've realized that there are cities that you have been building, but the byproduct is not what you really want. Maybe you feel beat down by the system and you're making bricks. Or maybe you're forcing people into making bricks. No matter what achievement you or I ever do, the goal is to be pulled forward into the unmistakable love and connection that God has, that he wants to walk with us leisurely strolls in the garden, hand in hand, creating a world of love, of joy, of peace, of patience, of kindness, of goodness, of gentleness, of self-control, one where each of us has a role and it lifts up those around us and gives us meaning. So, my friends, may you come to make a name for yourself, not by choosing your own path, but by asking God, how do you want to use me to be a blessing to the world? How do you want to use me to further your story? How would you like this city to be built? And how many rooms can we create for those people who feel left out? Much love, my friends.